The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 8th of July, 2020. On the podcast today, Wendy Lawrence, Chief Executive Officer of Totally PLC. That's TLY ticker. And Wendy discusses some of the highlights from their final results and outlines what's to come. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about gold, rare earths, lithium, plus the Billionaire Cobalt Club, Iron Ridge Resources, Scott's Gold Resources, Bushveld Minerals, Codal Minerals, and Savannah Resources. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can check out the top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, and you can check out lots more content. Right, there's one about Onkimune. There's another podcast there about Impact. That's an article. And SP Angel Morning Note. And check out our COVID-19 index while you're there. Again, for the third day in a trot, I think, the top stock is Gfinity, up 15%. The bottom stock there falling the most is E-Therapeutics, down 24%. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Wendy Lawrence, Chief Executive Officer of Totally PLC, TLY's ticker. Wendy, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. Good afternoon.
Now, you've released your preliminary results for the 12-month period ended the 31st of March 2020. And it's amazing. I mean, you know, it's an historical document. A lot has happened since, but you've achieved a lot. And we'll go into, you know, what you've achieved and also what you expect to achieve going forward. But before we do it, as always, if someone's listening, Wendy, are not familiar with Totally, can you just explain, summarise the business, please?
Okay, so Totally is a provider of a full range of health services, working in conjunction with the NHS in England, but also NHS Scotland, Wales, and in Ireland. And basically, we're there to support the NHS and the other commissioners in terms of delivering the demand that's put upon it for services. We do that via three divisions, so urgent care, planned care, and insourcing, and respond to whatever we're asked to do, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So the results, 12-month period ended the 31st of March 2020, which are 3 months old now. And wow, those 3 months have been very different for the entire world. But we'll discuss that. But of course, I mean, I assume for many businesses have suffered, but I think you've really come into your own in that 3 months. And I think a lot more people are now aware of you. First of all, let's go through those results. Give us some financial highlights, if you could, Wendy, from that.
Okay, so a really good year for us. I mean, during the year, we completed our acquisition of Greenbrook Healthcare and we launched an insourcing business. So big items for us. But the highlights really is that revenues just under 106 million, which was 35% up on the previous year. A lot of that to do with the acquisition of Greenbrook, of course, but we also did see business growth. Underlying EBITDA of 4 million, which again is a growth for us, and cash in the bank at the 31st of March of 8.9 million. And alongside that, we paid our maiden dividend during the year. We have no debt. And so for us, we believe that we're in a significantly stronger position than previous years and are very, very well geared up for what the world throws at us. And yes, you've already touched on the first quarter.
Yeah, exactly. So let's look forward, like I say, because things have changed. And we last spoke, I suppose, at the height of COVID-19 sort of lockdown, all that stuff. So I assume now it's getting sort of back to normal, is it? So, you know, how are things sitting with you and what does that mean for the business?
Okay, well, I think it's a new normal, if that's the right term. So at the moment, the three divisions are impacted very, very differently. So our largest division, which is over 90% of our business, is urgent care. And during the coronavirus and the pandemic, obviously, we've been working frontline with the NHS, delivering NHS 111 services, working on GP out of hours. also in our urgent treatment centres, but also we've mobilised a lot of coronavirus-specific services for the NHS during that period. It's been really busy. We are being paid for all of that additional work, so that's good. And we're still doing that. What we've seen is we've seen a downturn in demand on 111. Patients are beginning to present again back into the urgent treatment centres and going back to their GPs. So we are seeing that little bit of return to normal, but we are still running a number of coronavirus specific services and are waiting alongside the NHS now to monitor what's happening with the R rate in terms of the virus spreading. And indeed, do we need to prepare for a second spike of infection? And closely watching, you know, any need for local lockdown. So there's a lot of uncertainty out there, but I think it's fair to say that, you know, we're really proud of what we've been able to do over the last quarter, and the NHS have been very complimentary on, you know, how we've supported them through that. And now we just really wait to see. So for urgent care, busy times, returned a little bit back to how it was, but obviously we as a business are still operating social distancing the same as everyone else, and the uncertainty around what next now we've eased the lockdown.
Like you say there, you know, NHS, and I suppose as it sort of solidified that relationship there going through that stressful period.
I mean, beyond doubt, you know, every time I speak about the business, we always say how important it is that we deliver the high quality service and we're responsive. And I think that's actually absolutely true of what we've been doing over the last quarter. You know, the NHS and was trying very hard to respond to something which, you know, hit us very, very quickly. And we, as they, have tried to manage everybody proactively through that process. And I'm very proud of the way we've done that and the way that our staff have responded. It's been difficult, but I think everybody's learned a lot. And I think now it's about embedding those lessons into practice, whether it be in the NHS or our own organisation, and making sure that we're prepared for what comes next.
I think
it's very fair to say, Justin, that the other two divisions have been impacted differently. The NHS very early on stopped elective services because obviously we were concentrating on the demand from the pandemic. And so my planned care division was put on hold. That's mainly outpatients and physio. We were doing very little work. We were still doing some urgent stuff and we were still using video consultations, but it's fair to say that was halted. Contracted revenues are still there, but obviously are paused while we move forward. So that's going to move to the right. Mm-hmm. And our insourcing business, which was the new business that we launched in October, which is all about clearing down NHS waiting lists, again, that was stopped. But again, the order book and the pipeline is sitting there waiting to restart. And that business did restart some service in June. And the demand for that is much increased because we all know after reading the press that NHS waiting lists have grown exponentially. They're talking about 10 million people now waiting. And obviously, our insourcing business will be working with the NHS to work out how we get patients treated quickly as soon as we can restart those models.
Yeah. And so looking forward, you know, even though it's nigh impossible to look forward, because we can see what, you know, no one predicted what has happened this year at all. It's all hit us for six. But what's your ambition then, totally? Where do you hope to be, say, if we're speaking in 12 months' time? Ideally, you know, the plan, if the plan goes, you know, if you stick to the plan and it all works out, which is hard to say about the future, as we know now, where do you hope to be? What's the ambition here, Wendy?
Yeah, well, we've got forecasts out in the market, and you'll have seen today that we've removed those forecasts purely because of all the individual moving parts and the uncertainty. You know, the scenarios are if there is a second spike, it will look quite different to, you know, if we just carry on. So, you know, we've always said that strategically we will work with the NHS to respond to that demand. And that's why we established ourselves, and that's what we're doing. So we're not removing our growth aspirations, they're just being moved to the right. I believe that overall the opportunity for Totally has increased, but it's when can elective services restart? So our ambition around growth is still there. It will just be delivered in a different way in the short term while we get through the pandemic management. But that growth is there and the opportunity is bigger, Justin.
Yeah, absolutely marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Wendy, if someone's listening right now, I like the sound of the progress you're making and the space in which you inhabit, but are not yet following the story. Please give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, for me, I still think that we are undervalued. Our share prices has done very well over the last year. But I think when you look at the opportunity out there and the way that we've responded and working with the NHS and our reputation, you know, growth is very much part of our agenda. So we know that we can deliver. We know that we're a key partner to the NHS, and we know that waiting lists are growing. So for me, it would be a no-brainer as to why you wouldn't follow our story and actually get involved with us.
Marvellous stuff. Wendy, good to chat to you as always, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yes, good, thank you.
So I was looking at your morning newsletter here that comes out into my inbox, and you mentioned something called cobalt metals, and, you know, I didn't really read any further. Now, how you should have entitled that is the Billionaire Cobalt Club, because that would have got my attention more, because I didn't realise, we're just talking now what we're talking about today. So explain cobalt or cobalt metal, what was it all about?
Cobalt metals, it's a business in San Francisco, and they're looking to use artificial intelligence to try and make new discoveries, new geological discoveries. And the first target they've got is in Raglan in northern Quebec in Canada, and they're pulling together all the data that they've got from the area and the region, and they think that if they chuck that into a big computer, it'll tell them that X marks the spot. So so good luck on that one.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I wouldn't bet against those guys, you know, because talking about resources, they've got the resources, you know, and to make things work, haven't they? And it doesn't matter to them, chucking a couple of million into it each or whatever, you know, they can fund it, can't they, you know?
Well, look, it's a great idea from Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos and Ray Dalio to try and find conflict-free minerals in North America. Mm. The flip side of that is, okay, so there won't be quite so many jobs in the Congo for these poor lads. The good thing is it would be diversify the source, and there would be less suspicion of child labor and things like that. So clearly they've got some altruistic aims here. But, you know, geology is, in my view, it's more of an art than a science sometimes. Mm. Many, many discoveries are made by artisanal miners or geologists falling over artisanal miners or geologists just out there in the field chipping away at rocks. And
hasn't it become increasingly science, though? Is it increasingly? And these are the kind of guys that push it ahead. Let me ask you a question. If someone come up to you, say, they say, John, and you've never heard of this company, they said, John, how do you fancy throwing a couple of grand into cobalt metals? He said, what is that? I said, well, the other guys we're approaching who are investing are Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, and who else? Ray Dalio. You'd say, yes, listen, put me down for a couple of grand, wouldn't you? Because you wouldn't bet against those guys, you know?
Well, look, I don't disagree with what you're saying there, but actually, now that I think about it, I'd rather go with some of the geologists who we know and love, the guys out there who are following structural trends, who really understand how minerals form within the Earth's crust and how they concentrate close to surface. And, you know, if I look around, just off the top of my head, Iron Ridge, with the work that they're doing in the Ivory Coast, I think is really good. They've got a great geologist there, Len Clough, who's really on the ball with it. You've got guys, you know, other guys who've been following trends like that. The guys at Cora, actually, very good with their geology. Altus Strategies, also a good team there. They understand how to
I had the guys on the podcast field. Yesterday. I had Stephen on the podcast yesterday. Very interesting company, Altus. And, I hadn't heard of them before. Literally, under the radar, and that's why they came on the podcast. They're hoping to get a bit of an awareness amongst private investors. And very sharp guys, yeah. But no, what I'm saying is, a billionaire cobalt club, they could hire geologists as well, but they use AI and geologists. They could do all that. So I just go where the money is, you know, because those guys, they're not used to losing. You know, they don't like losing, and they'll chuck everything at it. So, you know, you could go with both anyway. you know what I'm saying?
No, but look, they will need geologists to interpret what the computer's telling them. They will need...
And they will have the best of them.
What happens is you find something in the ground, but it always leads to more questions. So you then need to figure out, well, what more information do we need? How do we get that? Where do we drill? All these sorts of things. So they're going to end up returning, in my view, to the traditional way of doing things, which is, okay, the computer's given you a whole bunch of targets to look at. Now you need some experts to come in and actually make something happen and find something in the ground, and particularly finding nickel cobalt PGM projects. They're sometimes quite small, well obscured, not easy to find a big system that's covered under the ground. I mean, we know other people in Botswana, for example, who are trying to find things under the sand, and it's got to be very systematic, it's got to be well analysed, and to some respects it can't be rushed.
Yeah, no, I agree. But listen, the machine learning side of it is very interesting. And who's going to teach the machines? Geologists. And do you think that Gatesy, Dallaglio and Bezos will get some two-bit geologists in to help them out? No, probably one of the best in the world. Probably the best, you know, they can get, isn't they? So what I'm saying is I think it's very interesting what they're doing, because they don't put their mind and time and effort towards something that would lead to a dead end. Of course, a lot of the experiments do, but they'll try everything. They're winners. The guys are winners. You know, they will not sit down and take loss. So,
well, if I was them, I'd go straight to Paul Kitto at Newcrest or Nick Mather at Solgold.
Exactly.
You know, people who really know what they're looking at.
Yeah, exactly. And those guys would not turn down the opportunity, I'm assuming, to work with the richest guys in the world, you know? That's what a heck of a top line in your CV that would be, you know? You know, last project I worked with Bill Gates, Bezos and Dallaglio. It doesn't get better than that, does it, you know? Anyway, it's all gold. It's all gold. Because gold's hitting a new high, isn't it? Like, where are we back?
It hit $1,801 an ounce this morning. That's the first time it's broken over 1,800 for 11 years, I think. Mm. So it's a good price. I mean, if you think it leads me on to another point. We are seeing a rerun, and I think we're going to see a bigger rerun than what happened after the global financial crisis. And there are various economists out there saying that this is an L-shaped recovery or a W-shaped recovery. We see this as a V-shaped recovery. But that's from our angle. If you are looking at the tourism sector, the airline sector, leisure overall, yes, then of course it looks L-shaped, because it's really going to struggle to recover. But in the mining sector, and it's well understood that stimulus in construction is good for creating jobs, that if you create jobs, that actually costs you less in the long run to create jobs than to have people unemployed. And nobody wants to have anybody unemployed unintentionally. So we know, so there is strong demand coming in for commodities, and that's why we're seeing copper prices continue to rise. And let's face it, none of these metal prices are very high levels. They've all been struggling to climb this wall of worry, not knowing where the next bit of demand is coming from, and with the expectation in the market that the mines would just carry on producing. Mm. And what we're seeing is, because the virus has been so terrible in Latin America, lots of copper mines and other mines in Latin America have been forced to close or reduce production, at least temporarily. And that's really impacted the supply chain. And every time there's a hit to the supply chain, the prices go up again.
Yeah, yeah. And I find this talk of, like I said, a V-shaped or U-shaped or L-shaped, a bit simplistic. Like you say, there's different sectors. And so, you know, if you want, there's always bargains to be had in the stock market, and there's always stocks that will do well. In like I said, there's been a lot of COVID stocks that have done superbly well, you know, in the last of 2-3 months. Unbelievably well. So whenever there's a downturn, there's always opportunity. And when there's recovery, there's always opportunity. But there's always sectors that will suffer more or gain more, you know. So this is a stock picker's market, isn't it? You just go out there and find the right stock. By the way, 16th of September 2011, the last time gold was at this level. So there we are.
Ah, there we are. Yes, yeah. And if we look at look around the world, all the Chinese, I think all the Chinese rare earth stocks are limit up today. Now that tells you that something's going on. That tells you that China is looking to announce maybe a massive new offshore wind farm, something like that. It wouldn't surprise me if they decided to put 1,000 windmills in the South China Seas just to frustrate the Americans and to piss everybody off in that end of the world. But that's a way to do it. So clearly they're going to announce, and maybe they'll announce it at a provisional level rather than a government level, but something that's going to drive demand for rare earth minerals, and something is driving these stocks higher.
Go back to gold there. We talked before we came on about Scots Gold, and it's only a small company. It's 32 mil, I think, one of that level. But I didn't realise there was really some news today, but they've got some big backers, haven't they, as well? Or a big backer. Don't know, big.
Yeah, they've got strong shareholders who are committed to supporting this company. And I think, you know, that it's important to understand that with any mining business, if, you know, to see that commitment behind it, either from normal investors or just from existing shareholders who take a personal interest in these things. And Scott Gold is very fortunate to have such a strong and loyal shareholder base. But of course, that's not just supported by their love of Scottish gold, but by the fact that this is a business that should see sales of something over $20 million a year in the next couple of years, and very, very strong free cash flow off the back of that. So, I mean, I think this is looking like a fantastic investment right now, particularly with gold prices up here.
Well, Nat LaRue is the chairman here, and he's got a bit of cash behind him. Nat co-founded the Constitution Society in 2009. I'm not quite sure what that is, but he spent most of his career in finance, and as chairman of Scots Gold, he was the chief exec of IG Group in PLC before retiring in 2006. So, you know, when that really become a obviously FTSE 250, FTSE 150, I mean, he was the guy there, and I imagine he had a nice share option scheme there, and a nice bit of pay to go with it, and a nice probably pension to retire with, I imagine.
Well, I must correct myself. Gold sales in 2 years of about 16,000 ounces, and that would give you sales of something over $40 million a year, which I think would be pretty good stuff. And if we translate that back into Scottish groats, I think you're going to have a very nice company indeed.
Yeah. So the Constitution Society, this is what it is. It's got a picture on the website of the House of Parliament. It's an independent, non-party educational foundation which works to promote informed debate about constitutional reform. We take no position on specific reform proposals, but advocate better legislative standards and oppose ill-considered piecemeal change. So, whatever that is all about. There we go. So he's head of that, but he's got a bit of cash there. So, rare earths are up, and cool. Anything else happening there, John?
Well, there's a lot of flooding going on in China, particularly along the Yangtze River. Mm. There are some people suggesting that the Three Gorges Dam, the biggest power generation plant, hydropower generation plant in the world, may have some cracks and problems. Personally, I don't think this is about to collapse and kill millions of people down the Yangtze River, because the area affected by the flooding is nearly 3,000 kilometers long. So it's a very, very major water course. Wuhan, of course, is right in the middle of things, and people are being evacuated along the river. I think they've evacuated 40,000 people so far, and there are a couple of major cities that are subject to flooding, and Wuhan is certainly one of them, as if they didn't have enough problems already this year. So the negative is, it could hit economic growth in China. The positive side of that is actually that China will no doubt mobilize lots of construction companies to go and build more flood defenses to be ready for this sort of thing next time. And there'll have to be loads of reconstruction of housing and flats and things that have been damaged and cars that have been washed away and stuff like that. And of course, the Chinese government is very good at banging the drum and you know, sending people in there to try and sort things out. And at the same time, they have a fairly significant unemployment problem. This is more with the migrant labor, and they know that they need to sort that out. So one of the best things they can do is employ these guys and get them working on the flood defenses as soon as the rain stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And did you see in London there was a flood, wasn't it, yesterday as well? I thought, what's going on there? Is it the North Circular? One of the water mains had burst, and literally, there must be millions of gallons. There's cars stranded because of the thing. I thought, wow, how did you stop that? That's phenomenal. But, there we are. That's dividends and profits from a water company gone, but it won't affect the top brass, of course. But there we are.
Well, I'm sure there'll be a hose pipe ban any minute then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Someone will have to suffer somewhere, and it won't be the board and or the shareholders. Cool. Marvellous. Anything else, John?
Well, there's always stuff going on in the world. China Railways have invested $46 billion in the first half. Makes the UK's HS2 project look relatively small.
Yeah.
This is just in the first 6 months of the year. And they had a poor first quarter for investment because of the coronavirus and problems with logistics. But guess what? They more than made up for it in the second half. They are so quick to get on with. They reckon they're going to put in another 4,400 kilometres of new line this year. Of that, more than half of it is high-speed rail. So they are really getting on with the job. It's going to use something over 500,000 tons of steel just in the rail alone. It's lucky China produces about 500,000,000 tons of steel every year, so they've got a bit to spare. But when you add in the bridges and all the bolts and the gantries and everything else that goes into building a railway, there's an awful lot of steel that gets used. And I think that 500,000 tons is a number that will rise hugely by the time they finish. So I think there's ongoing good demand for steel, for the raw materials that go into steel, for vanadium, of course, and our favorite company, Bushveld Minerals, and everything else that's related to that. So this is why we have a V-shaped recovery in the mining sector, is because the Chinese are so good at getting on with it.
Yeah, do you know, a different scale, isn't it? I mean, I was talking to Mike Ralston, CEO of Blencow Resources yesterday, a graphite. He's talking about the gigafactories in China they're building. And I forget the numbers now, but it dwarfs anyone else. They're building sort of, lithium-ion battery factories, basically, at the size and scale that no one else has ever seen. It's phenomenal, you know. And basically, Europe and USA need to play catch-up massively, you know.
And they will need to get more lithium, because I'm told that a lot of the lithium mines at the moment have shut down due to very, very low lithium carbonate prices and are just producing off stockpiles. In order to keep things ticking over and in order to meet sales commitments and stuff like that. And at some point, the demand has to rise and that must lift prices in order to bring these mines back online and encourage new mines to get going, because there simply are not enough mines to meet the demand from all these new gigafactories. It just isn't there. So companies like Savannah and the guy, the lithium guys in Mali at Kodal Minerals, they're all there waiting to get their projects going. And a higher price will certainly help. And we saw Société Générale offering $45 million of project finance to a lithium project in Brazil a week ago, which I thought was very interesting. It shows that the bankers can get their heads around it, and they can project finance lithium projects even in these troubled times.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And I guarantee at this level of gold, a lot more gold projects are getting the go-ahead as well. Because all of a sudden become, a lot of companies, they've gone from being quite a good project to now an excellent project. And the margins there.
Well, for gold companies, it's very simple. I mean, the price is what it is. You can sell forwards into that price. The market is unbelievably liquid. So you could actually finance your project by selling your production forwards. Mm. And then the bankers will come running to you going, take our money. Yeah. From a mining industry perspective, it's almost too easy.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff. John, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. It's Onkimune Holdings. That's up just a smidge, 1% at 131.5. At 4, Blencow Resources, 7.25 pence, non-mover. At 3, Tomco Energy, down 4%. And 0.59, traders sort of dream that pops up, then just collapses. At 2, Gfinity, up 0.4 to 15% up, 3.05 there, closing the gap on the chart, looking strong. It's been strong for days. And at 1, Boohoo.com, of course, down again, 11.25% down, the darling of AIM, falling over, pretty much, 232.3. Over those claims of modern-day slavery, of course. They're looking into that. They did release something today, but there's a lot of people leaving them next. ASOS and a couple of other companies now not listing their clothes. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Arena Events, director shareholding. At 4, Open Orphan, upcoming investor events. At 3, Amiga Diagnostics, result of open offer, full take-up. At 2, Melody VR, Live Nation partnership. And at 1, Argo Blockchain, director shareholding. So what happened there? Looks like Peter Wall has purchased 570,000 shares at 3.5 pence. How much is that? Times 0.035. Can't do the math, I'm not sure. 20 grand. Huh. Right. Okay, that's it. Top, most liked, the most read RNS right there from Argo Blockchain Money. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.